Well, welcome back to Jazzed. Today I'm really excited about our guest. You probably know her very well on Twitter, and if you don't, then you definitely should. Tiffany Gurney is here with me. Tiffany, how's it going?
It's going great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Excited to be here.
You mentioned this is your first podcast.
This is my first podcast.
So
Lucky you, right?
How are the nerves?
Nerves are good. I feel good.
Okay, good. Luckily,
you've put me at ease, so I'm not feeling, you know, pressured or stressed out or anxious. Like, this is good.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I feel like it's always easier to, you know, obviously talk about things that you have a passion for or enjoy or love. So
yeah,
happy to be here.
Good. So I kind of gave you this tiny little brief intro, but tell people first off where they can find you, mostly through Twitter, I'd assume.
Yeah, I love Twitter. I mean, Twitter has its pros and cons, but that's kind of where I find my tribe. Jazz Twitter tribe. So you can find me on Twitter at Tiffany Gurney. Very easy. That's TiffaneeE, two E's, then Gurney. I also have an Instagram and a Facebook, but those are secondary, I feel like, to Twitter.
There's a lot of people who don't have Twitter accounts. And when you're kind of on Twitter and on Twitter a lot, nothing else really compares.
Agreed.
And I was talking to my sister-in-law and I was telling her about this podcast and how I kind of promote it through Twitter mostly. And she's like, oh, I got to get on Twitter. I'm not on Twitter. And it's not one of those things that you just get on because it's so different than Instagram or whatever. But I love following you. I was just telling you because you always have funny observations or remarks about the jazz or whatever you're commenting on, and they always seem to just be like spot on. Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, so just take that compliment. But I think we first met officially, we both used to work for the LHM, Larry H. Miller Group of Companies.
Yep.
So I was with the jazz and you were with Saxon Horn. So tell people kind of maybe about your old job and how we used to know each other.
So I actually, how I got started with the Larry H. Miller Group of Companies is I actually started part-time at a fan store at Southtown Mall in Sandy. So I worked there part-time, ended up working there through college. Then I ended up actually doing an internship with the corporate office of fans and then ended up working there for a little bit and then moved into Saxon Horn, which is the advertising, you know, arm of the group. So I spent a lot of time with Larry H. Miller Group and fans and Saxon Horn and actually did a little bit of work with Megaplex Theaters as well, which I'm a huge movie buff too. So that was always fun to go hang out at Megaplex Theaters and you know, grab video if they were having a big Star Wars marathon or things like that. So
we definitely need to get to movies in just a little bit. It's kind of now I've kind of made it my thing. After we talk jazz, we talk movies and TV.
Yep.
So you did like social media or marketing or both for?
Yeah. I was like a, you know, like a marketing coordinator, social media manager. Various marketing type roles.
Yeah. So that's kind of where you, I think, honed your craft of tweeting.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I've been on Twitter for a while, but it hasn't really been, I feel like the past maybe 3 to 4 years is where I've really kind of made it more of an emphasis. And I kind of got off the Facebook wagon and was like, nope, it's Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another cool thing about this podcast is we're just talking about Twitter and social media. So I feel like so many people within the jazz Twitter community, you get to know, like I said, like their avatars or their name. And there's people who you like to follow. And when you see them tweet something, you're like, oh yeah, what did they say? And it's interesting that world of not ever really knowing each other for real, but you really know each other through Twitter.
Digitally.
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
Yeah. It is very weird. But I mean, yeah, you don't see each other face to face, but you do kind of build these relationships with people. I mean, they're not, you know, they're not super deep relationships, but they're, you know, they're still relationships. And like you were saying, you kind of have the people that you really like to follow and you are curious what their opinion is on a certain topic.
Where I want to start first is just your jazz fandom. So have you been a fan your entire life? Was there a moment or a game or a player or kind of a team in jazz history that you remember like attaching to? Talk to me about when you first kind of started loving the jazz.
You know, I, every time I'm asked this question, I kind of feel bad because I don't really necessarily have like a moment or a player or things like that. I mean, I do remember just being little and loving basketball. I can't remember anybody ever kind of pushing me in that direction. It just kind of happened. I do remember, most of my friends growing up were boys. And so I would go outside and, you know, we'd play hoop. And we would play lightning and around the world and things like that. And I do remember very vividly, 97 and 98, the finals years. I remember, watching the games, just excited, stoked. And I remember crying, both years that they lost in the finals. And I was just devastated and upset. Mm-hmm. And I remember crying, but then I would go put my tennis shoes back on and I'd go outside and I'd go play some more hoop. So, but yeah, not necessarily a certain memory, other than for sure, like just being devastated.
I think that's probably a common sentiment for kids who grew up in that era. Just like me, I was the same thing where I don't really think about, oh yeah, it was 92 and the Jazz, beat the Blazers and I became a fan that day. I think it's, you just kind of were born into it, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then you just, the love almost just like mounts. Like
yes.
As the years go on,
yep.
It becomes more and more of this love that you hope will give back to you at
yes.
some point with the championship. It really was devastating because for so many reasons that we all know,
mm-hmm.
but just on the cusp,
yes.
and if you go back and look, besides one game in 98 when we got blown out, every game in those two finals were so close and it was just one shot here, one horrible call there by Dick Pavetta, right?
Yeah, jazz fans love him, right?
And it was just like within our grasp. And I still, just watching the last, minute of that last game of 98, how we had the lead and then Jordan steals the ball and goes out and makes, just like casually like trots up the court.
Right.
It's been 21 years, right? An entire adult person has been alive, born and alive since then. And I still hate watching it. Will the sting ever go away?
I don't think it will go away until the Jazz actually win a championship. I think it will forever linger until that happens, unfortunately. That's funny that you bring that up because, on NBA TV, they'll have these classic games. And every time they have one of those games from 97 or 98, I can't bring myself to watch it. I want to because, it's great seeing like Carl and John in their prime. But it's so tough because it brings back, it takes me back to being that 9 or 10 year old kid and just crying because it was so important to me. It's still important to me.
I often think about like, if we could just replace one player from that 98 team with like a player from today, like imagine having Rudy instead of Ostertag,
sure. for sure.
Or, even Joe Ingles instead of, you gotta love him, Adam Keefe, but just like another like playmaker who could score, mm-hmm. and how things could have been different.
Yes.
It's
hard to compare because the league was so different then, right? Compared mm-hmm. to how it is now. Now you've got, we're bombing threes left and right, up and down the court. It's fast paced. It's not so much the half court trotted up, kind of NBA anymore.
Coach Sloan, and you said like it was a different game.
Yeah.
But Coach Sloan was just so anti-three. You're wide open and you're one of a select few guys who can shoot him, then you shoot it. But otherwise, the closer, literally every inch you get to the basket is a higher percentage shot. So you need to get as close to the basket as possible.
Yep.
Obviously it worked for the era. Like we almost won two championships. But when you mm-hmm. think about like who, and not necessarily best, like, Stockton and Malone, but which players do you just like instantly just kind of like put a smile on your face?
Oh, that's a really good question. I mean, I think you have to. I mean, as a jazz fan, you have to say Carl and John. I feel like I have a little bit of recency bias too. And I start to think about, you know, the past couple years, the players that I've really enjoyed being on the team. I mean, I have to bring up Derek Favors only because, you know, this is his first season not with the Jazz. And I think everyone's a little, you know, I mean, it's bittersweet. You know that he's in a good spot. I think the Pelicans are going to do pretty good this year. You know, I'm hopeful that he's, you know, going to start and do well. But at the same time, you know, it's like, Derek, he was such a good guy. I mean, quiet guy, but just down to earth, genuine, really, really awesome guy. So I think of Favors. I even kind of go back and I understand that there may be still a little bit of feathers ruffled with this player, but I mean, I was a big D Will fan when he was here. I loved the way he played. I love that he was kind of a bigger point guard and that he, you know, he bullied people. And so I think of, okay, D Will, I liked him too. I know there was the big, you know, issue and then him getting traded and things like that. But mm-hmm. I think he's kind of, with time, I think people have kind of lessened. Mm-hmm. Would you agree? You know, kind of on their D Will
totally.
Hate.
And I agree with you. I've always been a Deron Williams fan, even from the day we traded him. At the time I was writing for the Jazz website. Mm-hmm. And the first game back when he was with the Nets, the New Jersey Nets, I wrote a little blog or whatever that basically was asking fans not to boo. It was just my opinion, but all that Deron did when he was here for the Jazz, and I think if you start thinking about all-time Jazz players, right, obviously Stockton, Malone are the mm-hmm. top two. And then, you know, it's basically your own opinion for, you know, 7 through 10 or excuse me, 3 through 10 or even above that. But Deron, I think, is probably in the top five ever of Jazz players.
Yeah.
And he obviously had his best years here, multiple-time All-Star, multiple-time Olympian.
Yep.
And, yeah, I mean, he was so surly. He was like the epitome of just like, I want to play basketball and I don't want anyone to talk to me.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And when he was with the Jazz is when I was... So after my Cypress Crew days, I was an intern, right, for a few years. And I was a game ops intern. So I was one of these guys down with the headset doing stuff with timeouts and yep. the national anthem or whatever. So you would have times to be around Deron. And he just didn't want to do things like, you know, players have to like take pictures with random sponsors and just things like that. And you could just tell he never wanted to. And it's funny, the half a season he played with Hayward, it's almost like he just rubbed off on Hayward so completely.
Sure.
Because Deron was the star and Hayward was the rookie. And he was just like, oh, that's how I need to be.
Throwing balls at Hayward's head. And,
and that, yeah. But yeah, hopefully, and I know that the Jazz had their podcast a few, maybe, you know, last year where they had D Will on and they were talking and he and Coach Sloan kind of made amends with, you know, their issues. And I hope that fans could welcome him back.
Mm-hmm.
It would be fun to like have like a celebration of him. I don't know when or if the Jazz would ever do that, but I would be certainly for it because I was a big D Will fan.
Yeah. I still have a couple of D Will jerseys in my closet that, you know, hang there just, and I see them and it just, I mean, it brings back good memories of, you know, the D Will Boozer mm-hmm. kind of era. And I mean, the Jazz had some great seasons then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to admit they were awesome.
It was fun.
It was super
with
fun.
Memo. Yeah.
Money Memo. I mean, who can love that guy? Imagine that guy playing now too.
I know. And it's so sad that he had to end his career really with like, once he tore his Achilles, it was just like, he played a little bit more, but it was just over. But yeah, that guy is so, so great. I was going to say, it's ironic that when you mention your two kind of Jazz players, Favors and Williams, how they were traded for each other.
Yes.
How maybe one wouldn't have happened without the other. That's kind of interesting to think about.
Yep. I want to mention too, I think a lot of Jazz fans, including myself, always loved Paul Millsap. I'm going to give Millsap a shout out because I mean, just, you know, didn't complain, kind of I feel like in the same sense of like he just wanted to play. Mm-hmm. Get him on the court, he's gonna rebound. I mean, you know, later on in his career, even now, you know, he's kind of more of a three-point shooter mm-hmm. than he was when he was with the Jazz, but loved the way he played the game. Loved his like tenacity when he was on the court. Mm-hmm. So
just all business.
Yeah. All business.
Yeah.
Very like Jazz DNA player.
Totally. These are fun conversations for me to have. You know, when you think about Paul Millsap, and at the time we had Paul and Big Al, but most Jazz fans, at least from my point of view, wanted us to play Cantor and Favors.
Mm-hmm.
We had these two young bigs, and we kind of not necessarily wanted to get rid of our older bigs, but we kind of just like let them go because we had the young guys. And I don't know, I feel like that's kind of a, maybe the Jazz wish they had that back mm-hmm. with at least Millsap. I mean, Big Al was Big Al, and he's kind of a lovable guy in his own way, but yeah, Millsap still doing his thing, different kind of player, like you mentioned, but yeah, he was fun having around. And a great success story. I mean, second round pick and just kind of worked his way to an all-star.
Yeah, you love those stories. Those mm-hmm. are the kind of stories that, you really like to see those and just see, you know, exactly where they, like you're saying, second round pick, not a whole lot expected. And then they blossom into, you know, the player they are today. And I mean, good on them because they've obviously put in the work mm-hmm. to get where they are.
Do you remember where you were, or did you watch the Miracle in Miami game? Like, do you remember watching that game?
The Miracle in Miami game.
Yeah. Because that was almost like Paul's, like, it almost like turned a light on in his mind. Oh, I can shoot threes because he never shot threes. Yep. And suddenly here's this guy training
like,
threes.
Oh, I can score like outside the 3-point line. Yeah. I mean, everybody loves Donovan. Who doesn't love Donovan Mitchell right now? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's
the guy.
He could do no wrong right now. Right. I mean, everybody loves him. Rudy. Obviously, everyone loves Rudy and his defense and the leadership that he brings to the team. And I think he holds everyone accountable, especially on the defensive end, which is, you know, what you want from your center.
And speaking of another, I know he wasn't a second round pick, but Rudy and like all the work he's put in, you know, if you remember back when we first drafted him, he couldn't stay on the court. Mm-hmm. Like the guy was fouling every 5 seconds, it seemed like. He didn't really, his footwork, his hands, like he just could not. He didn't get it at all.
Yeah.
But man, like that's like a credit to one, obviously like the Jazz coaches and people like working with him, but to Rudy, like here's like there, how many 7-footers do you see come through the NBA who are just kind of like lanky and are drafted because they're 7 feet tall.
Yeah.
And then they just like 2 years later, they're completely gone. But when they're drafted, you know, like whether it's Robert Swift or Mohamed Sané or whatever, you know, there's always like this guy in the draft. It's like, wow, look how big he is. And then he's just gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, Rudy, like hard worker.
Well, I feel like, I mean, cause it's easy to say, oh, we saw something in that player, you know, in when they came in for a workout or something like, I mean, that can happen with a lot of players, right? Mm-hmm. You can say, oh, we saw something,
mm-hmm.
but it really has to come from the player themselves and they have to want it and they have to want to put in the work. And Rudy wants it. I mean, you can tell he wants it. He's 2-time defensive player of the year. And I mean, I hope he gets his third this year.
It's funny how the NBA goes where it's almost just like, it's somebody else's turn. Mm-hmm. You know, like
how we feel bad. This person's already won.
You know, Paul George has never won the defensive player of the year. Like, let's give it to Paul George. Or Giannis, he's not going to be MVP this year because he was last year, but let's give him defensive player of the year. Like, it's funny how the media votes like that. I don't really love it.
I don't like it either.
Yeah. But at least they have recognized Rudy because he is the best defender in the NBA. Like, stats don't lie.
Stats don't lie.
Okay. So we've been talking about players. I'm going to say a player's name.
Yeah.
And you just say the first word that comes to your mind.
Okay.
Okay. So I'll start with Donovan Mitchell.
The first thing that pops into my head is his nickname, Spida.
Okay.
And I think, you know, I think of his shoes and I think of, I mean, his incredible dunks.
Mm-hmm.
Love him.
He just has that total package of like, he's a star.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, once you have a nickname and you kind of have like your logo, you know, you're a big deal.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Okay. Next one. Hopefully this doesn't touch a chord with you. Ricky Rubio.
Ricky Rubio. Man, what's the first thing I think? I think of like man bun. I think of his hair, honestly.
Yeah.
I think of, you know, during games and getting his, you know, hair tie out and fixing his hair and, yeah. Mm-hmm. Man bun. Okay, that's the first bun. Thing that came to my head.
Okay. Carlos Boozer.
And one.
That's good. I was going to say it's either and one or grab it.
Yeah.
Boozer. Another guy who just has such a weird, when jazz fans think about him, you know, like, it's not usually like fond memories, uh-huh. which I think is a little unfortunate because he was really good.
Mm-hmm.
But yep. It would be fun to have like a D. Will Boozer reunion at jazz. Like, that would be fun. I'd be there. Okay, another guy, Andre Kirilenko.
Is it weird that the first thing that I think of is his back tattoo?
No. Hey, this is, I want your first instinct.
It's more so like an image, right? It's that image of like his back with that ginormous, I don't even remember what it was.
It wasn't it like some World of Warcraft
character? Yeah, it was some character or something. Just covering his entire back and thinking, wow, that's, I mean, you've got to be pretty committed to have a huge back tat like uh-huh. that.
I think that is like a commitment. Like, imagine, I don't have any tattoos. I don't know if you do, but imagine having zero tattoos. At least I don't think he did. And then suddenly just your entire back. Yep. Like, I'm going to go in for 12 hours, however long this is taken, and I'm just sitting there until it's done. Like, that is a commitment.
And it takes a lot of time. I mean, I don't know how long that would have taken to do, but you had to go in multiple times. There's right. no way you could get all of that done in one sitting.
It's got to be painful. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Back tattoo. I like it.
Some of these are more than one word, so I apologize.
That's okay.
So I'm trying to word, keep it to phrase, maybe one or two. That's yeah.
Okay. Okay. Rudy Gobert.
Stifle Tower. Yeah. Blocks. Altering shots. Defensive paint presence. You know. Yeah. Stifle Tower. I love that nickname for Rudy.
Yeah. Shout out to Jody.
Shout out Jody Gennessy.
Yeah, that's his baby right there, the Stifle Tower. He got it. Okay, Joe Ingles.
Slow-mo Joe. But, you know, it's funny because he has this nickname of, like, Slow-mo Joe, but he's crafty. He's crafty. You think he's slow-mo, but he can get by you. Mm-hmm. He can confuse a lot of people because you're thinking, I'm guarding this older guy, and mm-hmm. he, you know, a lot of the jokes, right? Oh, he looks like a math teacher or whatever. He's got nothing on me. Yeah, he's Toby from The Office. He's got nothing on me. And then he gets right by you for the layup, and you're like, oh, I guess I gotta watch out for this guy.
Joe gives people like me who used to play basketball a lot, like, that was our, like, that was my style. You know, people would, like, look at me and be like, okay. And then you got to get him with, like, that. You know, if I get a half a step, which that's all Joe needs to get by someone. So, yeah, I like Joe. Joe's the man. He's another one of these guys like Donovan. Like, how as a jazz fan, how do you not love Joe?
I can see why fans of other teams wouldn't like Joe. Mm-hmm. Because
like the Thunder
he
fans.
Is a pest. Mm-hmm. But that's what endears him to jazz fans, because I feel like every team kind of needs that person. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the Warriors have Draymond. Like, Draymond bugs me so much. But if Draymond was on the Jazz, I would love Draymond. Mm-hmm. So, Ingles is kind of that way for us, too. I mean, you know, he's just crafty. He talks a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, he gets in opposing players' ears, and it's great.
It's funny, because, like, that's how he is all the time. And so I worked around Joe a little bit, you know, when I was there. And even behind the scene, like, off the court, he never stops like giving crap to people, even like me. Once he like realized who I was, because you know, like the players like will see, you know, the social media people around, and they'll be like, "Oh, okay."
Yeah,
they'll like finally kind of it'll click. And Joe knew I was the one who would like make the threes of the week video, right?
Right.
I don't even know if they still do it, but and there was like a week or a video that I didn't include a Joe Ingles three, and it was just like post game. Like after a game one night, I'm like walking in the tunnels, like going back up because our desk used to be upstairs. So I would just like go back upstairs, and Joe sees me. He's like, "Hey, how come I wasn't on threes of the week?" And he like was joking, but he was not joking.
Yeah.
And I still feel like my shoulder hurts. Like he came up and he like patted me on the shoulder, like boom, like, "Hey, how come I wasn't on threes of the week?" And I like looked up and I was like, ah, like I think he just separated my shoulder, yeah. Joe. And believe me, I made him sure he was in threes of the week. It's funny how players notice, like they watch those things. Yeah,
they do.
So yeah, Joe, he's a funny guy.
And I think, I mean, especially nowadays, right, with social media being such a huge thing, I think players are very well aware mm-hmm. of social media and what's said about them, and use it as motivation.
Mm-hmm. they want to be in Threes video.
They want to be
in Threes. They better make some Threes. It's funny, a total side note. Did you ever know Bill Lee?
Uh-huh, yeah.
So Bill and I used to be like the little duo doing like all the
dynamic
jazz.
Dynamic duo, right?
Yeah, all of the jazz social media stuff. And we had this really interesting relationship with Alec Burks, where the only thing he would ever say to us is, shout me out. Mm. And that was his way of saying, hey, say something about me on Twitter.
Yeah.
For example, we'd be at City Creek Mall for lunch in the food court, and AB would be like in line at Subway, no joke. And we'd be sitting there, and he would see us from across the food court and be like, shout me out.
Shout me out.
Like, he, no matter what, like, we had this video where he was doing a post-game interview in the locker room with media surrounding him. And Bill walks by, and he stops answering questions and looks at Bill and says, shout me out, and then keeps answering. So we got this, totally a side note, but mentioning like players notice, and we said, hey, AB, anytime you get 20 points, we're shouting you out.
Ooh,
every single time. And we would do it. Like, I bet you could go search you at Utah Jazz and just search the phrase shout out to Alec Burks 10 and find him, because we would.
Oh,
but the funny
great.
Thing about AB is he like never really did anything on Twitter. So he would never like retweet it or interact with us or anything. So we would always be like, you got to mention it.
You got to do something with it.
Anyway, total side
note. Yeah, he just wanted you guys to make sure you were talking about
it. Shout me out. I have a video I wish I could show you right now, but of my very last Jazz game. I went down, and I still have it on my phone, and I was just recording him because I knew he would do it.
Yeah.
And he looks over at me and goes, shout me out, and maybe I'll show you off once we're done because it's funny.
Shout me out.
Okay, let's get back on track here. We just did Joe, so let's do John Stockton.
Short shorts.
Short shorts, yeah.
Short shorts. Good old John, basketball John. Yeah.
The GOAT.
The GOAT. Greatest point guard of all time.
Yeah. I still am mad about Andy Bailey ranking Chris Paul ahead of him. I don't know if you ever read that, but like, I don't know what that guy's problem is.
Chris Paul? I can't take anybody seriously who just flops all the time.
You're right. I think that should have been, I told Andy too, I'm like, that should have been in your consideration. You know, horrible teammate. All he does is complain. All he does is flop.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just stat based or per 48 minutes, like when you're ranking all time, and he didn't get it.
Yeah. It's all of the extra little things too. Short shorts for John.
Okay. I like it. Another kind of throwback, but just an inch. I wanted to know what you would say about him. Mark Eaton.
See, that's a tough one. I guess for that one, I would probably just say, I remember his red hair.
Okay.
Didn't he have like, it was kind of red, wasn't it?
No, red, for sure.
Yeah,
red. Yeah.
Yeah.
Red beard. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember the, like the red hair, the red beard. I mean, obviously he's a giant. I don't know why. That's the first thing that came to my mind was the color of his hair.
Yeah. And he is a giant. Like, you'll see him at Jazz games and he's like he's a giant.
Well, and you see him even standing next to Rudy. And you're like, wow, I didn't know there was someone out there who could kind of dwarf Rudy in a sense. And I've never met Mark, but he seems like, you know, even though he's a giant of a man, like he just seems like a super down earth guy.
Yeah. I've never really interacted with him either, other than just like nodding and, you know, saying, wow, please don't step on me. And I'm a tall guy, but yeah, Mark Eaton, red hair.
Yep.
Okay.
Red hair.
Okay. Got a couple more. We've kind of talked about these two, but I want to hear first thing that comes to your mind, Derek Favors.
I think just quiet, and not to say that quiet is a bad thing, because I think sometimes you can think, oh, if you know, a player is quiet, it's not good. You know, you want the loud, vocal kind of players. But I think you kind of need somebody like Derek Favors in the locker room to just kind of keep everyone. Mm-hmm. Calm, cool, collected.
Kind of quiet.
And just because you're quiet doesn't mean that you aren't confident. I think Derek Favors is a confident guy. That's just his personality, is he's a little more on the shy side.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, Mehmet Okur.
Money.
The money
the
man.
The money man.
Yeah. Gotta love Memo. Oh, I love that guy.
He had really nice hair too, if I remember.
I think he still does.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Memo, if you were to like think, okay, if I could just take someone's like life situation, like that dude is like not even 40, I don't think. Maybe he's 40. But just, you know, set up, houses. Like, he's got his wife and his kids.
He looks really good for his age,
He looks
too.
Happy. He just plays golf in Sandy. Like, like, he's living the life and he deserves it.
He's living the life.
Yeah. Okay, I got two more. This one will be interesting. Dante Exum.
I hate to say it, but it's injured.
Injured. Yeah.
I'm really hopeful that this year he can, you know, get that injury bug out and just play a full season. I think he still has a lot to offer. Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw that last year. I mean, he's great defensively. He was giving Harden fits. So I'm hopeful.
What did you make of this scuffle or whatever from two days ago?
Well, I was actually kind of surprised that it got into the media the way it did.
Well, it's funny the way that, like, usually they, like, open up practice to the media, like, when practice is over.
Yeah.
Like, when guys are just shooting around, they, like, let the media come in. But for some reason, they let the media come in when they were still, I guess, playing 2-on-2.
2-on-2, yeah.
They're never going to, like, open the media again, ever.
No.
Because it's probably the, you know, Quinn said it last night, like, it's the kind of thing that happens, you know, players get into it. The first thing I thought, because, you know, you mentioned he's injured, is, like, what if a couple minutes before the media came in, Dante took a hard hit or wasn't supposed to be hit or whatever, and then it happened again, and he was, like, mad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, hey, I'm trying to get healthy. Like, why are you meeting me at the rim and, like, making me fall on my back or whatever happened? So that was my first instinct, was, like, he was probably just mad because he's not supposed to take a hard hit.
Yeah, because he's thinking, I want to play a full year. So.
I want to play a game.
Yeah. No hard fouls, please.
I know. Okay, last one, Mike Conley.
I keep coming back to hair, but I think of his dreads that he's got now, and I think about headband, which, side note, seems to me like headbands are going to be a thing now.
I think so.
Which I'm happy about.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen Mike Conley sporting a headband. We've seen Brantley sporting a headband. So I don't know. Maybe we'll see Joe Ingles, you know, sport a headband again this year.
Yeah.
Minus the injury that he had like a cut or something.
Like,
you know, he had that bandage and everybody was like, oh, headband Joe. Like, this is it. This is the best.
Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna do a bonus one because you mentioned hair. How about Quinn Snyder?
Oh, Quinn Snyder.
What comes to mind when you think of Quinn?
I think of, like, what's the? It's on the tip of my tongue, but it's like, you know, you got the guy like in the lab, right? And he's like concocting all of the
scientists.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably the best way to say it.
Mad scientist.
I mean, with the hair a little bit. I know that, you know, fans of other teams in the league, because sometimes I'll go to like forums for other teams just to see what they're saying about the game. And it's so funny, you know, whenever they talk about Quinn Snyder, it's always, oh, this guy looks like he's ready to kill somebody. He looks like, you know, things like that. Or you've got the opposite where some people are like, and it's probably, you know, women fans who are like, oh, he's kind of cute, or I like his curly hair, things like that. But
it definitely seems like he knows. He's aware of his hair.
He is.
He knows when that curl comes down. And
yeah, the one little curl that.
Mm-hmm. And I can say that now because I don't work there.
Yeah.
I can't say this when I work there, or else somebody would hear it and be like, why are you talking about Coach Snyder?
I also think, you know, like, Quinn is a teacher too. You know, you always see him, you know, he's taking players aside and he's explaining things to them. He's coaching them. He's teaching them. I mean, and that's obvious. I mean, that's what a coach is supposed to do. But it feels a little different with Quinn. And I think the players are, you know, obviously A, aware of that, but B, also grateful for that kind of one-on-one coaching and teaching.
Yeah. Like, he's kind of just totally invested.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree. Switching gears a little bit to, like, this season. You know, we've been talking about players and memories and stuff. What do you think about this season compared to, you know, last year, the year before, the new players we've gotten?
Yeah. I mean, this season is interesting in the sense of, I mean, you know, last year before last year started, you know, we didn't really make any changes to the team. We kept it fairly similar, you know, to the year prior. So this year, you know, we've brought in a bunch of new players. And I think it takes time to get everybody on the same page. Like you were saying, I think there's been some overreaction to preseason, and I get that. You know, I was at the preseason game last night against the Kings, and I mean, I'll admit there were times where I was sitting there and I had to remind myself, okay, it's preseason, like this doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But you mean, as fans, we're invested, even if it's preseason, and you know, we get emotional about it and we're passionate. But I'm not too worried. I know that that's easy to say, I guess, maybe for some people, but I think the culture that is built around this team, I'm not too worried about it. I think things are going to be fine. I mean, you know, Mike Conley's been playing in Memphis his whole career. He's coming into a completely new situation. Mm-hmm. It's going to take some time for him to develop, you know, some new habits and things like that. And I think this team is so unselfish too, that's something that new players to the team have to get used to as well, is, hey, you know, I'm playing on this team where people are unselfish, where we're making the extra pass, you know, things like that. I have high expectations for this year. I'm sick and tired of getting to the second round. I want to get past that. You know, I want to win Western Conference Finals or Finals, you know. And I think they can do it. I mean, the West is going to be tough. There's a lot going on in the Western Conference. But I do think that with the way that Quinn coaches and with the way that the culture is around the team and the players that we've brought in, I think we can get there.
Do you think it's like a matchup? Like, do you think there are certain teams we need to hopefully avoid to get to like the conference finals?
Yeah. I mean, that's what we've been saying for the past however many seasons, right? Let's just hope and pray we don't play the Rockets. Mm-hmm. And I get that. I mean, James Harden is a great player. But I think we, you know, we brought in, that was the big thing last year, right? Was we can't shoot. So, I mean, I think everyone's, you know, pretty aware of the woes that we had in the playoffs last year. But I think with Mike Conley and with Bogdanovich and things like that, I think we'll be fine, mm-hmm. you know? And I don't necessarily feel like we're going to deal with that this year, where we're going to look at the standings, you know, at the end of the year and think, oh crap, we're playing team X, or we're playing, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe I'm just like overly confident right now.
I was going to ask you which games you're looking forward to going to, or, you know, perhaps like most exciting games you've been to. But I think if I were to go to one game this year, I want to go to the Pelicans game.
Oh, for sure.
Because I want to cheer Derek Favors.
Yes.
Like, I want as a fan collectively to like have that moment. I've talked about it was almost like the exact opposite. I wanted to be at the Hayward Celtics game because I wanted to just be in the room when fans booed. Like, it's almost like part of moving on.
Uh-huh.
And maybe it's part of moving on for Derek. So that's kind of what I think. But like, when you think about whether it's this season or seasons past, like which mm-hmm. games do you think about when you think about like being a Jazz game?
Yeah, so again, a little bit of recency bias, but you know, a couple years ago when the Jazz were playing the Thunder in the first round of the playoffs, I was at one of the home games. It was a whiteout game. It was loud. I mean, everyone knows that you know, the Jazz home court is loud and proud, and we're there and cheering. But man, playoffs, completely different atmosphere, very intense. And that was so fun to chant with to chant with fellow fans, you know, push off P.
Yeah.
So that was, I mean, playoff games are always really fun to be at, but that was probably in the past at least couple of seasons one of my favorite games to attend. Yeah. Was playoffs against the Thunder and chant push off P and watch specifically Joe Ingles just frustrate so much mm-hmm. Paul George. I that was great. Mm-hmm. and the trash talking, and yeah,
that's awesome.
So great.
That's why we're not scared of the Clippers, because no. We have Joe Ingles. Like, he's just gonna neutralize Paul George.
Paul George stopper right there.
Yeah.
So
I'm gonna shift your favorite TV show of all time. what would you say? Or shows, if you have multiples.
So you and I have had this discussion many a times. Lost is a severely underrated show in my book. I feel like, because Lost ended, what, 2010, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
So it's been almost 10 years since the show ended. And I feel like, you know, you look at the show now, 10 years later, and if you liked the way the show ended, you're still a huge fan. If you didn't like the way the show ended, you're still a hater, you know? Mm-hmm. It was kind of a polarizing show, I feel like, towards the end. Mm-hmm. I personally loved it. And I will always be a fan of that show. I will die on that hill. No one can ever get me to get off that hill. But yeah.
No, I agree. Lost to me. So I started watching Lost mid season 3. So I didn't like watch it from the very beginning. And at the time I was living with one of my brothers and he's like, hey, you should watch Lost with me. And I'm like, okay. You know, like I knew what it was. So I just like watched the very first episode I ever watched of Lost. And if you're a Lost fan, you probably remember season 3 when Hurley finds the blue bus with Roger Workman is, you know, dead in there or whatever.
Yes, like, the skeleton.
The skeleton.
Yep.
Uncle Rico. Spoiler alert, but I feel like after 10 years, it's kind of like if the statute is gone.
Yeah, if you haven't seen Lost and now it's been 10 years after the fact, I don't think you need to worry about spoilers.
Yeah, okay, good. So yeah, that was the first episode I watched, and then I watched like the next week, and then I was one of these guys who I watched season 1 and 2 in like 4 days.
This was the binge watching before binge watching.
Oh yeah, and it was when you had to go get DVDs.
Yes.
And I went and bought season 1, and then I watched them all. And there's like, these are like 25 episodes. And so I was like literally sitting on a couch for 4 days.
Yep.
And then season 2, there was, you know, back when video stores existed, there was a Hollywood Video right across the street. So like I went and rented the season 2. And then season 3 wasn't out yet. So I had to, I actually rented them through iTunes so that I could watch them.
Right.
So I could catch up because I started mid season 3 and I wanted to get to the finale so I could watch, you know, live or whatever.
Yes.
And that was like, we have to go back, right? Like season 3, I feel like every season has such a different feel.
It does.
But the we have to go back moment, I feel like, is when Lost kind of changed its just direction.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily that it was now going in a bad direction, but it just like made everything so much different. Like, wait, what? They have to go back? Well, what?
Yeah, it was a different vibe, definitely, after that point. I kind of had the same experience as you. I actually didn't see any of the first season. Somebody told me, oh, you've got to watch this show. A plane crashes. These people are trapped on an island. And I thought, well, that sounds interesting. I'll give it a shot. So I think I did the same thing. I went and rented the first season. And I was hooked after watch. I mean, I did the same thing. I just kind of binged mm-hmm. first season and fell in love with it and then started watching it from the second season on. I think one of the things I loved most about the show, it wasn't even necessarily the show, but I had a group of friends and we were all into it. So, you know, every week that night that Lost was on, we had a very specific routine that we would do. We would go pick up food somewhere. We would take it back to my friend's house. We would eat our food while we're watching the show. We would discuss afterwards. And if you have watched Lost, you know that it's a show that every episode seems to end on some cliffhanger or some question or something. And so afterwards, you're talking with everybody and you're theorizing about what does this mean and what's going to happen next and, you know, things like that. So a lot of my like love for Lost too just comes from kind of having this group of people that you know, it's community.
The excitement of watching it.
Yes.
Yeah, I totally.
And this is and this is before, you know, this is not DVR. Mm-hmm. It's on at 7 and you have to be in front of the TV at 7 o'clock and you don't want to miss any of it. Because sometimes Lost would throw things right at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you can't miss it.
Before the
whatever, weird, whatever sound thing. When the Lost word pops up on the screen. Yeah.
Yes. No, speaking of like, I was one of these like completely nerd out, like Losties. Like I like to talk about the theories of what's going on. And I think I maybe have like tweeted you this before, but I was such a lost nerd that I would join like message groups and just to like theorize or whatever. And it got to the point where we talked about Twitter. So back in like 2007, okay, when I first started watching Lost, there's this website, TV.com. Like, I think it still exists or whatever. And I don't even know why I centered on that. But there was like this little community where you get to know people's names. And there was like 20 or 30, like, you know, people in this Lost group. And we would just like talk about Lost all the time. I know, it's so nerdy. But here's where it gets way nerdy. During the summer between season 3 and season 4, we were all like, oh, I wish Lost would come back. So we all like adopted a character. So we all like got assigned a character, and then we all started writing our own episodes of Lost. So for example, let's say you're Kate. So you would write Kate's part, and it didn't have to, you know, it was the characters are who they are, but you can make Kate do whatever she wants. It was like a different variation of the story. Mm-hmm. So you would write your Kate segment, and then you would send it to me, and I was John Locke, and I would write Locke's part, and then I would send it off. And we would like, we only did it, I think, because it was so much work, like a couple of times. But that's kind of like how
that was. Wow, that was way into it.
I know. Yeah. So I love Lost.
Your Lost fandom might surpass mine.
I don't know. I just like theorizing about what the mysteries meant and like what was going on with them. So I assume you, because you said if you liked the finale, then you like you still love it. So you're one of these who liked the finale.
I get why people didn't like the finale. But at the same time, I thought it was fine. I think initially I was like, I don't know about this, but I kind of made peace with it. And I was like, no, that's actually a really good way to end it. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people were upset that, well, not every mystery was answered. And you know what? To me, that's okay. Because guess what? It's 10 years later and we're still talking about it. Yeah. And that's how you know that's a good show.
Yeah. No, I love that show. And I've rewatched it because you mentioned like your group of friends. Like my wife and I met, we started dating in 2007. So we kind of started watching it. So I went back and rewatched it with her. Mm-hmm. Right. And so like, season 4, 5, and 6 were like us, like we have to watch it. Yep. We have to get our popcorn. We have to sit there. And so, yeah, I think I don't know if there's another show like that that's come out, because now everything is just like, you just binge watch it and here's the whole season, just watch it.
Yep.
So yeah, I think maybe that's part of why Lost was so great, was it was so different and you kind of loved the characters probably for the most part. And it was just like must watch, like it grabbed you for like every minute of the episode.
And I think that's something that we miss now with, you know, with shows being released on Netflix. You know, for example, Stranger Things, right? The whole season is out right now. Let's go binge watch it. But you do miss that, hey, let's get a group of people together. We know on this date every week we're, you know, I kind of miss doing that.
Mm-hmm. I do. Yeah. We don't have it anymore. I guess now it's just like sport. For me, it's like sport events or whatever, jazz games.
Come over to watch the game or things like that. Yeah.
Well, Thank you for taking, you know, an hour of your time, an hour plus to like come and do this. I really appreciate it. You're, like I mentioned at the start, you're a great person to follow. You know, you're a huge jazz fan. So I recommend if you're not following Tiffany, you better go follow her now because you're missing out. But any last like words or anything about the season or the jazz or Lost or anything?
No, like I was saying earlier, I'm really pumped for this year. I think it's going to be really exciting, really fun. I'm really interested to see how the new players mesh with the team. I'm interested to see how much our offense improves this year. I'm interested to see how far we go in the playoffs this year. I was saying earlier, my hopes are high. I'm hoping for a Western Conference or a finals appearance. So, very excited. Thank you for having me on. It's been really fun.
Yeah, it has
been. My first podcast experience has been a success.
Good. I mean, I feel like this has been a good convo. Like maybe we got to do this again.
Oh, I'd be happy with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, good. Because I thought it's been a really good conversation. So anyway, check out Tiffany and follow her. And yeah, the season is right there. So
it's right there. It's go Jazz.
Go Jazz.
Let's get it. Whoa.